And for the sermon today, Mr. Steve Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Bishoner. Well, a lot of us are far removed from our school days, right? You bet. Recently, I guess my class from Brickett Wood, or not just my class, but everybody that ever went to the Brickett Wood campus of Ambassador College in England got together a couple of times in the last few years, and this year they're going to get together in Brickett Wood, England, the place where we all began our Ambassador College careers. And I began to be thinking about this topic about the time somebody posted a picture of me when I was 19 years old on this Brickett Wood reunion website on Facebook. I don't know if anybody can get into that. I don't suppose everybody can. Maybe you have to have been registered. I don't know how that works. But if you can get in it and you want to see what young looks, then just go to that website. If you want to see what hair looks like, you can go to that website. And also skinny. You can see that there as well. But I'd have to say that there is great interest in all of those people going to this reunion, which is going to be held very close to the college campus, and then they're going to have tours of it. It was a miraculous place. It was an unbelievable place, so I can see the attraction. And a lot of these people are no longer in the church anymore, but they're getting together, and I think that that's great, and that's wonderful. But let me ask you a question about your school. However far you went in school really doesn't matter. You got to really be honest for the sake of the sermon today. You really have to be honest with yourself as you're answering this question. And if you don't really want to raise your hand or not, then I don't care. And if you want to raise your hand, that's fine too. But there's no right or wrong answer to this question, by the way. But in remembering whatever aspect of school, how many of you really actually enjoyed going to school? Oh, that's good. How many of you really didn't enjoy going to school? Yeah, that's good too. That's fine. How many really enjoyed going to class and studying and, above all, taking tests? How many of you really like taking tests? Good. We've got one later. Verbal test right afterwards for you. Some of us may have hated going to school because of the anxiety associated with taking tests. And I've known people like that. They're better test takers when they can verbalize their answers than when they actually sit down and write the answers. And some people just have a difficult time. You know, they kind of freeze up during a written test. I don't know if any of you are like that, but there's some people like that. And their dislike of school is associated with the idea that eventually they're going to have to take a test in something that, you know, is just makes them very anxious to do that. And I certainly do understand that. And remember that joy and excitement you felt when you're just sitting there in a beautiful spring day and not expecting it, and whatever instructor it was, whatever class would walk in and say, "Pop quiz, close your books." How about the fear and the anxiety that was associated with that when you realize, "Oh, I didn't read those last two chapters." A lot of people don't like that. I grew up at a time, and let me say this right off the bat, I grew up in a time when things are different than they were now. When in our household, even though my father didn't go to college, my mother did go to college, my father really kind of, before we were ever born, he kind of made fun of my uncle who went to college, who went to Michigan and, you know, just, no, Michigan State, I'm sorry. He went to Michigan State and got an architectural degree from Michigan State. And, you know, my dad and his brothers always used to make fun of college guys. This was back in the late 40s, early 50s. But when we grew up, he turned around full circle because they realized the value of an education. And, you know, basically it was hammered in us that we should go to college. Now, not everybody is like that. And you don't have to go to college to be successful in life at all. In fact, today is probably, you know, the worthiness of a college education is really beginning to be debated more and more as, you know, people like I've got a friend in my company that graduated with mega debt by going to a very prestigious private university on the East Coast, and that's what all of his buddies did. And it was thought that that's where you got to go to school when you grow up in Boston, as he did. You had to go to a top college, Harvard or Boston College or one of these private colleges, and where you went to school really was kind of a determining factor as to your career later on in life and who you knew and everything else. But the bad side of that is they graduate with thousands and thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars of debt. So the value of a college education is kind of debatable. But I remember my father first brought this point up to me, and I wasn't really a very good student, by the way. In grade school, for the first 3 years of going to school, I was in a daze. I had no idea. My life was pretty chaotic as a little kid. I didn't know from what. I was just kind of out to lunch, you could say. And, you know, coming into high school, I was, you know, kind of above average maybe, but not really an excellent student, but really never studied. You know, I didn't see the need, and I wasn't motivated. I guess I don't know why, but... And I got decent grades, B's and A minuses and that sort of thing. You might say I was a B-plus student all through high school and that sort of thing. And I always thought that the A students had some extra special genius associated with them because, you know, if I didn't study, I figured that nobody else was studying either. But the fact is, a lot of these girls were doing really well in my class. They actually went to the library and read, and they studied. And they opened books up. They took hours every night to study. And, wow, I didn't do that. So in the middle of my senior year, my father said, so what are you going to do with the rest of your life? And I said, well, I guess I'll go to college. And he said, that's a really good idea. I think you should. How are you going to pay for it? What? I mean, college wasn't as expensive then as it is now by any means. But it was still, you know, I mean, relatively, it cost money. And so... That was something that I had to be prepared for. So all of a sudden, I had to come up with a plan to really get interested in academics because if I was going to pay for it myself, then, you know, that's when I realized, hey, maybe it'd be a good idea to start to read and study and do some of those things that everybody else has been doing for a long time. And so I did. And I actually became a pretty good student. You'd say A minus to A student all the rest of my college career. It's kind of funny that, you know, when that particular motivation was because I had to pay for it, which is kind of interesting regarding my current career. When I got my present job, my first assignment, as it was with several other companies before that, was to study all day for weeks. So in December of 2012, I landed a job with a large corporation, and my job for the month of December was to study 8 hours a day. And they said these huge, thick modules of work and completion dates, and guess what? Tests, lots of tests, tests out the yin-yang, tests every day that you had to take. It was kind of on the honor system, but I was taking tests and tests. By that time, I had gotten used to the fact that in embracing tests and, you know, I'd gotten into it. I once interviewed a applicant for Ambassador College from South Dakota, by the way, folks, the western side of South Dakota. I think you guys are from the east side, right? East River, West River. They don't know what that means here, but we can explain it to them later. But this young man, kind of like in my culture, in my household, you got to go to college. He thought because he was growing up in the church as a young person, he had to go to Ambassador College. And so I was interviewing. We had to actually interview him, even though we knew these kids. We'd actually interview them. And I said to him, well, you know, we made an appointment. He actually was a young married individual at that time, probably early 20s, maybe even late teens or something, but he had a very happy marriage. He'd met a young girl in a church, and anyway, he wanted to go to Ambassador College, and I said, look, he'd kind of worked on farms and, you know, done kind of the things a lot of kids do in South Dakota, learned to do a lot of things with their hands and everything. I said, look, did you enjoy your high school experience? No, I really didn't. I said, well, do you enjoy writing papers and studying and, you know, because a lot of what is going to be expected of you is you're going to study, you're going to learn, you're going to write papers, and no, I really don't like that. And, you know, if that's the kind of person you are. I told him, look, we can apply, but I just want you to be warned that if you really don't like that kind of work, you're really not going to like Ambassador College, or any college for that matter. You're really not going to be happy there. And if you don't like that, that doesn't mean you're a bad person, that there's something wrong with you, or that you can't really be a productive person. It just means that, you know, what's expected of you is something you really don't like to do, so why put yourself through that torture? Well, by the time I got my present job, and then there were several other jobs that I had before the current employee, a lot of your initial time is learning disease states, learning about the effects of drugs in the body and all this kind of stuff, and it's very intensive. And so for a full month, well, for 20 days, actually, that was my day-to-day activity, and they were paying me to do it, which was kind of nice, and it wasn't necessarily easy. Then there were 2 weeks of home office training in which every day was filled with academics, every day was filled with 8 hours of study, only, you know, presentation and lectures and all that sort of thing, and then tests every day. Well, I had to get to the point to where I was comfortable taking examinations because that's what you have to do. You have to, it depends on the nature of the company, what their culture is, but in this case, you had to get a 90 or above on every test or else you're in danger of getting fired. And so you're getting paid, but you could be fired if you don't score well, so your score is yours. And so I had to learn to take the terror out of test taking and exam taking and examinations. I had to get comfortable. And the real purpose of all of these tests was to help you to understand where you lack something, where you weren't prepared. And so before I went to the home office, some of the tests that we took were online, and so you could take them as many times as you wanted to. And so, man, I just got to be a whiz. I took some of them dozens of times online because you just take them and you could find out instantaneously how well you did. And I think it's a pretty good strategy by some teachers, although some people would scoff at this, that some teachers actually give the test to the students ahead of time and say, this is what you're going to be tested on. Then they're required to go into the manual and find the answers to each question. Now, some people would say, oh, that's really not good, or that doesn't really, you know, develop character. And I say that's crazy, because having to find the answers is really helping you to study. So that's my own personal feeling. And so that's what I did with that testing. And actually got to the point where, like one of our people here today, I actually look forward to taking tests. Now, most people are not like that. You may not be like that. You may not be the kind of person that really gets all happy and excited when the teacher says, take out a half sheet of paper and number 1 to 10, we're going to have a pop quiz today. It might strike fear into your heart for various reasons. Maybe it's because you're not prepared. Maybe it's because you have test anxiety. So you might say that I went to college, I was motivated to become more interested in the learning process because I had to pay for it myself. And then in part of my professional career, I was motivated to do it because I was getting paid to do it. Whatever became of the joy of learning? Well, there is that too, if that motivates you. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and in verse 27. First Corinthians 11 and verse 27, therefore, whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. So we see that prior to taking of the New Testament Passover symbols, we're to engage in a process of examining or testing ourselves. And in this case, it's all on the honor code, you know, the honor process. It's all voluntary. But we also understand by the context that if we don't do this, we're in danger of judgment. We fall under the judgment of sin. And we know that I'll just cite these. Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord. For those of you that raised your hands and you're very honest, I didn't like school. Hey, that's not a problem. That's not an issue. That doesn't mean you're a bad person necessarily. I mean, that doesn't, doesn't mean you're not a smart person. It just means that, you know, maybe you were an outlier. Maybe you just didn't care for the testing process so much. Maybe you had bad teachers. Maybe you had a bad school environment or whatever. But none of that matters now. That's all in the past. Maybe it was because you freezed up or you're very anxious every time you took a test. Or it could have been, like in my case, like sometimes if I'd go into a test, knowing I was going into a test, I mean, I don't really think I was lazy. I think I was probably kind of unaware that I'd know a test, a deadline. The test is going to be on Friday, March 13th, 2 months in advance, knowing that's the test date, knowing the curriculum, the syllabus, and everything. And, you know, walking in as if that was the first time I'd heard about it. Wow, we're having a test today? Are you kidding me? So maybe you were like that. You didn't prepare like sometimes I didn't until I had to pay for it or until I was paid to do it. But we cannot allow any of that to happen to us because we must examine ourselves. We need to thoroughly prepare ourselves prior to the Passover. So you know this already. How will you prepare for the Passover? How will you examine yourself? Because our examination process should be fairly thorough. Let's take a look at a few keys from the Bible today that can help us to examine ourselves prior to the Passover. It's not a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, do this and you'll be thoroughly prepared. It's more along the lines of, here's what I want you to do. Since I have learned the hard way through the school of hard knocks and experience that I had to get comfortable with the idea that my life was going to be made up and taking tests. My adult life was going to be a matter of just academic exams. Not that it was something that I was really gifted at or that I really enjoyed at the first, but I realized that my livelihood depended on the fact that I had to study and I had to learn. And you remember the best class, just close your eyes for a second, you know, think about this. The best class that you ever had, whether it was in grade school or high school or college, just think about it. Just think about that. The best class, the most enjoyable one, the one you couldn't wait to get to. And I bet even for those of you that didn't like school that much, there was one of those, right? Now, why was that? Well, there might be a variety of reasons. Could have been a great teacher. It could have been a subject that really, really interested you, and you were, I mean, you could have been bad at everything else, but then all of a sudden in this class, you became genius-like because you were really interested in it. And you did really well in it. I'll bet you got an A in it. I bet you got high marks. How are they classified to marks? Because you enjoyed it. And you were really comfortable with the process. All of us have at least one class like that, even if the, you know, if we hated school, college, or whatever. All of us had a class, a teacher like that. Am I right? Is there anybody that doesn't fall into that category somewhere along the line? Okay, we're all on the same page then. My goal today is not to give you a checklist of things that you need to do to examine yourself. My goal today is to get you comfortable with the process, is to get you to accept and like and be happy with and embrace that process of self-examination. And the premise that I begin with is found in Luke 12:32. There's a lot of other passages that I could quote, but I think that this one helps set the stage for self-examination, believe it or not. Jesus said, "Do not fear, little flock. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." That is like having God as your best encourager ever, which He is, wanting you to do well. God wants you to do well. He wants me to do well. He wants all of us to do well. He's for you. He has called you into his kingdom, and he wants you to make it. But you and I must examine ourselves prior to the Passover to be thoroughly prepared to take the Passover. Whether we're here, down in Sierra Vista, the Tanners to be in El Paso, we all have to go through this process of testing ourselves, examining ourselves. And to further supplement how much God is for you rather than against you, which he's not, I want to isolate two different words in the Greek language that help us to understand how to examine ourselves. You come up with your own little checklist, or maybe somebody else will give a sermon on how you can do this thoroughly and prepare yourself to examine yourself prior to the Passover. That's fine. But two simple little words help us to understand the difference in God's approach and the kind of tempting that takes place for all of mankind, and especially for us on a daily basis in this world. The first word I'll isolate is, well, it looks different than I'll pronounce it, and Greeks would probably cringe if they heard me pronounce it, but I'll tell you what it means in the English. The first word is dokimazo, dokimazo, and it's a type of word that has been translated from the Greek into English that means test or examine. This word refers to the act of testing somebody or something for the process of approving it. Now, the one thing that I give total credit to all the instructors that I ever had in my industry career is that, and they had to be pretty hard on us because they wanted us to be thoroughly prepared in the aspect of what we were actually going to be teaching others. And they were pretty hard, but they wanted everybody to succeed. Everybody that Eli Lilly tested and examined and self-studied for a month, that they spent mega thousands of dollars on and took to the home office, put up in a, you know, what we lived in apartments for 2 weeks at first in the middle of January, one of the coldest winters in Indiana history, by the way, 2002 or 2003 of January. Unbelievable. It snowed every day. In fact, every day we had like a 15-mile drive to the main campus of the company where our classrooms were. It seemed like every night it snowed, and it was cold, bitter cold. You made a wise choice in spending the winter in Arizona or wherever it is that you spent the winter. But it was very, very cold. But they all wanted us to succeed, and that's exactly how God feels about you. It's this particular word, which we'll cover again, refers to the purpose of approving you and making you whole, making you a part of that process to test, to prove, to scrutinize whether something is genuine or not. It also can apply to metallurgy. I was watching an interesting one of these National Geographic channels or something educational, Discovery. They're talking about copper mining in Arizona. And most of the metals are very similar. To get to a high degree of purity, you know what they have to subject the ore to eventually. You know, some of it's chemical process, but a lot of it boils down to heat, 5,000 degrees. And with copper, they have to refine it like two or three times, get 60% purity, and then finally 90% purity, and then 99% purity. It's all done through heat. A lot of it's done through heat, and a lot of sifting and everything. It's very interesting. This past summer, my boss had been with our company for 25 years, and so we all pitched in and got him. We're 11 people on our team. We all pitched in and got him 11 silver American Eagles as a gift in recognition of his 25th year with the company, silver being the silver anniversary, which are also 99.9% pure, beautiful coin. thought about it, 25 years, maybe we should have gotten him 25 coins, one for every year rather than one for every person in the district, but we were cheap and we didn't get him that, so. And he makes a lot more money than we do, and if he wants 14 more coins, silver is pretty inexpensive now, just go buy your own coins. So I wouldn't tell him that to his face, by the way. This word means to recognize as being genuine after examination, to approve or to deem worthy. It's the same word that you'll find in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 21, where there are a lot of little small instructions that Paul gives to the Thessalonians, and he says, test all things and hold fast what is good. Same word. You know, prove it, examine it, test it. And our lives are, as Christians, are ones of continual examination. This is also the same word, if you'll turn to Acts chapter 17 and verse 11, when we're speaking of Thessalonica, maybe Paul was thinking when he gave that little instruction to the Thessalonians, maybe he was thinking of this, that maybe that was something that they needed to brush up on or be a little bit better at, to have a little bit better discernment. It says of the Bereans in Acts 17 and verse 11 that these were more fair-minded than those in Thessalonica, in that they received the word with all readiness and searched the scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so. I'll bet some of you, especially if you've gone to college, maybe you didn't have this experience yourself, or maybe you even had it in high school. Usually you don't find high school instructors that are quite so mean-spirited. But I've heard of people in a class, going to a class fully expecting to be tested on material that has been covered in class, only to have the professor plop down a test in which he's never presented any information whole semester, and then you come up to the midterm or the final or whatever, and there's information there that you've never read, never studied, and has never been presented in class, and you're supposed to be tested on that. And that's really kind of very mean. I don't know what the purpose is, except it makes a lot of students angry and hostile and upset, because everyone knows their, you know, their chances of passing are very, very slim. But this wasn't the attitude of the Bereans. They looked upon Paul's teaching as honest and valid and then backed it up with an examination of the scriptures. Another Greek word used for examine is peirazō. That is spelled P-E-I-R-A-Z-O. Not that I think many people are really going to look it up, but I'll spell it again. P-E-I-R-A-Z-O. When I was in college in England, I remember the first time somebody spelled out something with the last letter of the alphabet, and they said Zed. What? Zed? What's that? What do you? I didn't know what they were talking about. They'd spell it P-E-I-R-A-Z-O. What? What is this? I mean, there were about 40% of us were Americans in Brickett Wood, and the rest were from the Commonwealth or from South Africa or the continent or something, and they were all familiar, they were all cool with Zed. I thought Zed was a man's name. Not a very common name, but I thought Zed, what we'd call dogs Zed, you know? We had a next-door neighbor that had a dog by the name of Zed. But no, and when we'd say Z, they'd look at us in slack-jaw amazement, too. Like, what's that? What's a Z? Z, what do you mean, what's a Z? A Z, that's the last letter. No, that's Zed. No, Zed is my neighbor's dog. What are you talking about? It means to try, not the last letter of the alphabet, this word, this Greek word, to try, make trial of, test, for the purpose of ascertaining his quality or what he thinks or how he will behave himself. Another meaning is to solicit to sin or to entice to sin or to tempt, to test, examine, to tempt, to entice to sin. That's another meaning, depending on the context of this word. Now, This word, P-E-I-R-A-Z-O, it's used in conjunction with God when he brings a trial or a test on somebody in order to prove your character or the steadfastness of an individual's faith, like in the following instance. Turn to John chapter 6, verses 5 through 7. Jesus used this, well, it's written that he tested or he brought a trial or a test or brought this to Philip on this occasion to test him, to examine him. But it was done in a far different way than how it is used in another incident. So John 6, verses 5. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" But he said to said this to him to test him. But this he said to test him, or to parazo him. For he himself knew what he would do. Jesus knew that he would perform a miracle. But he was providing this as a test to prove Philip, or to prove to Philip something, or to actually, I think he was using it so that Philip could see the difference between the way he was thinking and the way Christ thought in a different dimension, a spiritual dimension, because Christ said that he already knew what he himself would do. So he was testing Philip to ascertain his faith. I think actually he knew what Philip's faith would be, or to determine for Philip where his thinking was, what plane was his thinking was, what reasoning did Philip have. And I think that there was a help for Philip because he'd be able to experience very shortly the results of Christ's thinking, which was in a different dimension altogether than Philip's. Philip's thinking, physical, like all of us would be, right? A certain amount of bread, certain amount of fish. We cannot feed that many people. Christ knowing what, you know, I can multiply these loaves and fishes, you know, miraculous intervention. This word is used also in Hebrews 11 and in verse 17. And by context and the way it's used, it shows that God is using it to help the individual to understand himself and not to tempt or to elicit to sin in any sort of way. Hebrews 11 and verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, or parazo, offered up Isaac, and he who received the promises offered up his only begotten son. Abraham tested God. God proved Abraham's character and willingness to put him and his instruction first. God has also tested you from time to time, or allowed tests upon you by allowing or placing you in situations in which you must choose. And life is filled with choices, and whether we enjoy the process of academics and taking tests, it's something that you now have to get, or you've learned that you, in terms of a spiritual dimension, you have to get comfortable with it. You really have to embrace it, and you have to enjoy it. And in fact, I think that embracing it and enjoying it is the only way you can really come to the Passover with the right mental framework, with the right attitude of knowing that I've passed that test. I've examined myself. And you know what? If you're really honest as a Christian, this time, next year, last year, the year before that, and every year, there should be some results. You know, let's face it, none of us are perfect. So you should find something if you're engaged in the process now of examination. Now, that's why it is so individualized. Your life is different than anybody else's. What you need to examine yourself on is the same as all of us, but the results that you come up with are going to be far different. It's like a 100, you know, question test. You know, unless you and I are cheating off each other, if we, let's say, have really studied hard and we're really both going to do well and we're both going to get a 95, unless we're cheating, theoretically, We're not going to miss the same ones, right? We're not going to miss the same test questions. So the examination process for all of us is exactly the same. But what you come up with between now and Passover is going to be different than what I come up with. But the main thing is, you should come up with something. You know why? Because you're not perfect. The whole process of examination is one of self-discovery. It's one of understanding, where do I fall short? And you're never going to be perfect, but it's a process, right? And so, if you know, we're just going to be the same people now, or you know, in 3 weeks' time as we are now, or that we were last year. Why go to the bother? Why worry about it? But we are imperfect, and what I hope I can do for myself, even though this process is kind of painful. Hebrews brings the out, you know, not in the notes, but Hebrews, 14, I believe, 13 maybe. Bear with me. 13. There's not 14 chapters, so it's got to be one of the two. It's got to be 12 or 13. Yes, indeed, 12. 12 in verse 7, Hebrews 7. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? Yeah, that's true. But if you are without chastening, of which you have all become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. So the end result is a good thing, partakers of God's holiness. So, you know, it's not easy to accept correction, but in this case, you're on the honor system. You're the one that has to make the call. Nobody else is doing it, and nobody else can do it. Nobody else should do it. This is between you and God, and you should be happy about that, and you should embrace it. So I want you to be happy with the process, embrace it, get comfortable with it. I'll have to admit, you know, no, am I totally comfortable with taking tests for my life? There's one company that is out there that they do not pay their sales reps a quarterly bonus at all. They pay them on their performance on tests. Now, it's not our company, but that's one of them that does it. So they're basically taking tests all the time to earn part of their compensation. I would say that they're probably pretty highly motivated to do as well as they possibly can. Turn to Matthew chapter 4. Pardon me. This is another instance of that word, parazo, that is used in this particular time. It's used of Satan. And the manner in which he used it against Christ is the same manner that he tempts all human beings. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. Now when the tempter came to him, and he said, "If you're the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him up into the holy city, set him on a pinnacle of the temple, and said, "If you're the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you. And in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone." And Jesus said to him, "It is written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God." That's the word that the last Greek word that I gave you. Again, the devil took him up into an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to them, "All these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." And then Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve." Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him. The purpose of Satan's temptation or testing of Christ is far different than the testing process that benevolent instructors of mine have had where their desired outcome is for me to succeed. God's desired outcome for you is to succeed, so he would never put you in a situation of temptation to elicit you or to entice you to fail or to sin. It would not be his purpose to do that. There would never be any solicitation in any of God's testing for you to do evil or to sin, to break the law. But Satan will. He'll entice. He'll entice you to sin, to have wrong thoughts, to do things that you don't want to do. And that's his desire and motivation, is to destroy you. Because to get you to sin, to disobey God, to go against what you know is correct, is to give in to the lust that is already there present in the human condition. By contrast, the motivation of God is to strengthen you, to build you up. He will test you to see where you're lacking. Your self-examination of the pre-Passover examination is designed to help you see where you can improve. And that's the whole key. Not to get you discouraged, not to correct you. Let's face it, you've known people that have just take great pleasure in correcting. You know, I've often said that the two worst personality flaws to have together are arrogance and a desire for power. No, ignorance. Ignorance and arrogance, basically the same thing. Lack of knowledge and being a control freak. That is really, and sometimes individuals like that can really be thorns in our sides, and you really have to show a lot of patience with them. These two terms, maybe I didn't give you the other one earlier. I think I did, though. D-O-K-I-M-A-D, or pardon me, that's wrong spelling. That's the phonetic spelling. D-O-K-I-M-A-Z-O. D-O-K-I-M-A-Z-O. Dokimazo. It's used generally of God. It's never used in conjunction with Satan, but it's because it's always used for the process of approval. Examination or testing for the process of approval, for gaining and giving to you approval. Peirazo is used, P-E-I-R-A-Z-O, sometimes used in conjunction with God, but only in the sense of testing in order to discover what evil or good may be in the person, like finding out what was on Philip's mind. That was the use of the term test. It's pretty simple in the English language, because the English language is so rich that there are modifiers that, you know, even though I've explained these Greek words and how they can have various meanings and how they can be somewhat fluid, the English language is so great. It has more words than any other language. And because the Bible is translated into English, by context, we're able to see the use of the word itself and that it has that particular meaning in that particular context. The word parazo is in James chapter 1, verses 12. And it is not used or ever used in any context of God testing somebody in the sense that they would be drawn away to do evil, or that he's placing some test in your path to, you know, oh boy, I just know you're going to make the wrong choice. Just do it so I can slam you down. Not God. James 1 and verse 12, blessed is the man who endures temptation, parazo. For when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. Parazo, not by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away. So we see the difference in the English language between testing, examination, and tempting. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. That tempted is the word parazo. No test or trial can test God to be evil. He will not do evil. He does not tempt anyone to do evil. He may help check our motivations, our character, our willingness to obey, as he did in countless times, Abraham being one of them, but always with the motive to help us to see ourselves, what we need to work on. Verse 14 says, when we are tempted or we're solicited to sin or we're drawn to sin or to do evil by this temptation, it's by our own lust. And from the time of Adam and Eve, mankind has been subject, as 1st, 2nd, 3rd John show, that there's the pride of life, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes as well. And we can be, any of us can be enticed. None of that is from God. Lust conceives, the scripture says, or the other meaning of this Greek word can be to seize or to capture, to take prisoner. And then it grows, and the individual gives place to sin as if it were just growing like a child in a woman's womb. It takes control of you. It's also has a meaning of the word enticed here has the meaning of to bait or catch by bait. It's like a cheetah or a lion going after a gazelle. You know, there's no way they can stop that process. It's in their nature. It's in their mind. It's kind of like some have described. Now, not all of you are basketball fans, so I'll go try to be brief on this analogy. But the University of Arizona has a particularly gifted player on its team by Nick Johnson. His name is Nick Johnson. He's an incredible athlete. He's just like one of the most amazing players on the college basketball scene today. And they were playing Gonzaga a couple weeks ago, or a week and a half ago or something, in the NCAA tournament. And this little guard, I know he's kind of little because his father is little, and his father played pro basketball by the name of Stockton. It's John Stockton's son. Got a breakaway layup, and he's going to the basket, unhampered, nobody around, but Johnson, seeing him like a lion would see its prey from about half court, zeroed in and took, several large leaps and bounds. And when little Stockton, son of John Stockton, went up for a layup, he just batted it away. It was the most amazing thing to see this athletic move, but it was like he was so drawn to that play and his instinct took over, and it was one of the most incredible things to see happen from, if you like athletics. I mean, it was like, as they say, and the phrase is old and hackneyed, but it was like poetry in motion. It was like unbelievable to see this incredible display of athleticism. And it's like that. And people can be taken over by their lust in that same way, to where it becomes automatic and they've lost control. That is all from this world. It's from the devil. It's not from God. People lose control. God will never place you in a position to where you will be programmed to lose control. And that's where we have to be aware. Now, dokimazo is the word in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 28 that tells us to examine ourselves. That's the word examination or examine. It's to examine in order to approve. And that's a very positive thing in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 28. We've already read it. We'll read it again. It's a very positive thing. The whole context is positive, not negative. Even though there were some bad things going on in Corinthians at that time, we've gone into that before. There were some problems that these folks had. But it says in the previous verse that whoever eats this bread and drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. He'll bring the judgment of Christ's death upon himself if he doesn't do it in a worthy fashion. So how do you do it in a worthy fashion? You examine yourself. You test yourself. And then you eat of that bread and drink of that cup with a clear conscience. That's ostensibly the meaning behind it is that you examine, you're fine. You've done what you need to do, and you've taken corrective action. And in that sense, you would be discerning the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Of course, we see the things that we're doing right, and you should. I mean, examine yourself. You know, what are you going to get in the next 3 weeks? A 95? I wouldn't doubt it. 96, 97, 98, maybe a 99. But you're not perfect, and none of us are in the flesh. And so there's always room for improvement. Notice Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Now, as I mentioned, unless we were cheating and taking a test together, and we each get a 95, likely we'll get, you know, if we both got exactly a 95, we get 5 out of 100 wrong, likely, unless we're cheating, likely we'll, looking off each other's paper, we'll get different ones wrong. And that's because everybody is an individual. It's a physical analogy, obviously, but everyone is different here. Your weak spots are somebody else's strengths. The main thing is, in context of 1 Corinthians 11:28, you cannot examine others. Because if you're examining others and judging others, you are in completely the wrong path. Now you're guilty of perhaps the greatest sin of all, if there is such a thing, of self-righteousness. You're not to examine others, except in very specific circumstances, which I'll cover in a moment. The role of the individual in pre-Passover examination is critical at our success. We are to prove what the will of God is. Now, when you read Corinthians closely, you will find, by inference, the statements that Paul makes that show very clearly that he knew that they were examining him. And that's where they had a problem. They were smart. You know, they had wisdom. It's brought out in the first chapter. They were smart, intelligent people, you know, well-educated folks. But they were critical of Paul, and they were examining him. Now, he says in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, and he covers it in other places, so you can read the book of Corinthians, both letters, but you'll find it. You know, they were kind of guiltiness. And he says in verse 12, we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. What does that tell you? There's some who were commending themselves in Corinth, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. That is foolish. That is not the process. We, however, will not boast beyond measure, which means that they were boasting beyond measure, but within the limits of the sphere which God appointed us. A sphere which especially includes you. That was his area of responsibility. And by inference, he's saying, it's not in your sphere of responsibility to examine me. We all examine ourselves. It's an individual thing that we all do. Now, except in very special circumstances, which I find is rare in the church of God. But it's mentioned in Galatians 6, so we should turn there. Just lest you think there is a lot about not judging, not condemning in the Bible. That's what it means when it says don't judge, judge not. It means don't condemn. It doesn't mean don't judge. I mean, we have to evaluate. We have to understand what's right and wrong. You can't go through life without being, for lack of a better word, judgmental or evaluative. Another made-up word? I don't know. Okay, you get the point. Galatians chapter 6 says, brethren, if a man is overtaken in a trespass, in any trespass, breaking the law, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. Gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Oh, to entice, to sin, to do the wrong thing. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one examine his own work. Let him examine his own work. Then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load. So that's the word dokimazo. That's how God uses the word in his relationship in a positive way to prove us. Notice 1 Corinthians chapter 3. I talked a little bit about the process of refinement. And God has a process of refinement as well. And he was telling the Corinthians about it, that their works would have to stand this process of refinement. A lot of it, as I mentioned before, is done by heat, metals, metallurgy, and the process of making metals more pure hasn't changed a whole lot in thousands of years. They're able to do it in much more productive quantities nowadays, but you arrive at the process in the same way through heat, and the impurities rise to the top and they're gleaned off, whether it's silver or copper mining or gold, all those things that are valuable to mankind. Verse 12, if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, doesn't matter what the materials are, each one's work will become clear for the day. For the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work of what sort it is. If anyone's work which he has built on it endures, he will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned, he will suffer loss, but he himself will be saved, yet so as through fire. That's very encouraging. It's not a once saved, always saved scripture, but it certainly gives hope and encouragement that you can fall, you can fail, and God, through trials and testing that he allows you to go through, can even save you. It's much better to build with the precious stones, and that's what examination prior to the Passover is all about, is building with those precious building materials that are undamaged by heat. God is going to test our works to see if they have been built through the Holy Spirit. So that brings us to 2 Corinthians chapter 13. 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5. And here is the word perazo, P-E-R-A-Z-O. Examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you? You should. You should know if God's Spirit is working in you. How would you know? By examination. Well, part of it is going back in history, understanding your calling, understanding what you've gone through, understanding, you know, this has led me to baptism. This has led me to repentance before baptism, the laying on of hands, receiving of the Holy Spirit. You should know. You should never come to the Passover wondering, was I ever converted at all? That's not the time, you know, 5 minutes before you're going to partake of the symbols. Not the time to question it. Wow. The time to do it is all through the year. The time to do it is certainly before the Passover. We're not given a timetable. Okay, a month before the Passover, you start this examination process, because we're supposed to be engaged in an examination process all year long. But certainly before you come to the Passover, and I can't put a timeline on it, but I would think we're in a period of time when you've got a lot of time to think, and you've got a lot of time to examine yourself and to prove to yourself through self-examination that you are a true believer, and that you wouldn't be disqualified, and that you would never be disqualified. It's the word here is adokimos, adokimos, which means not standing the test or not approved. And it's used in metallurgy. It was used in Greek metallurgy to show that these metals, if they were not approved, they were not, you know, they did not stand the test. They were not of the proper purity. They were reprobate. So you may not have liked taking tests, or you may really enjoy taking tests, but taking tests is a part of a Christian's life. Being tested is a part of a Christian's life. We are to examine ourselves all through the year. I'm just saying, this is something you're going to have to get comfortable with, and it's your life, and your score is your score. It's you know, a pretty objective thing, but you're on the honor system. God gives it to you. I mean, it's like a take-home test. Bring in the next day. What did you get on it? Everybody got 100. What did you really get on it? Your score is your score. Unless it was intended for you to, you know, look up all the answers. But, right? I've seen the instructor come into some classes. Okay, everybody, close your books. We're going to have a test. Some people have their books open and they take the, well, let's see, you know. You know what? Sometimes the instructor just lets them do that, because who are they really fooling? It's kind of unfair for everybody else if it's graded on a curve, though. You know, it's kind of, it's not so good. Didn't really like that. But anyway, back to 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and in verse 31. This is really great. Take-home test. You've been given a take-home test today. And everybody's going to have to score themselves. 1 Corinthians 11 and in verse 31. For if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. It's up to you. There, the process is there. It's, again, not a, I haven't given you a 1-2-3 step, but through prayer and study of the Bible, you can come up with this on your own. You can figure out where you need to improve this year. And next year it might be something different, and a year after that, something different. But when we are judged, we are chastened by the Lord, that we may not be condemned with the world. So get comfortable, get happy with it, enjoy the process in the next 3 weeks. God is going to do some miraculous things with all of us, I'm quite convinced. So whether you like school or not doesn't really matter now. You're always going to be examined, and you're always going to have the opportunity to examine yourself privately between you and God.